My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go. So far, the rain is a gun. Fire,
to open the voice gate for June 23rd, 2026. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed, wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find us on social media at Open Voice Gate, both on Twitter and on Blue Sky. And if you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red boxes to sponsor this podcast, and you set up a one-time or reoccurring donation, no obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, joined alongside your other host, Case Lowe. And Case, we were, before we got and hit record, we were just discussing about the state of this company of which we cover, Dragon Gate, coming out of this Hakata double shot. And 2026 feels like it keeps on kind of chumming us downhill. But how are you doing, bud?
You know, I'm not awesome. We're very much at this very interesting point in the show where I have to come on here every week and figure out a new way to say largely the same thing. It's a very interesting position to be in. It's okay. I saw the Strokes last week. The Strokes were great. It's a right top-notch on. Rock band, bigger than ever. The Strokes, for people my age, are like the Eagles. They're like this vestige of classic rock that, like...
Which, first off, I like to say, saying that the Strokes is classic rock is very rude to someone at my age.
I don't agree with it either, but it's just one of those things... It's funny. I was having a conversation with somebody last week about the song Last Resort by Papa Roach, and I should note that I have met Jacoby from Papa Roach, and he is legitimately one of the nicest human beings alive. I always rank people based on, like, okay, if number one is Paul London and number two is Chris Hero when he's trying to sell you a t-shirt because you're convinced at that point that you guys are best friends and will be forever and ever, Jacoby's like in the top five of nice people that I've ever interacted with. And I always appreciate that about him, even if, you know, Papa Roach is Papa Roach and that is both good and bad. But I was talking to somebody last week about how Last Resort has become what people my age call like an emo anthem, even though it has no ties to any sort of emo music, no ties to any emo band. But I watched...
Completely different genre of music.
Completely different genre, but I watched an emo cover band last week cover Last Resort, and I was with somebody who was around your age, and they were like, what the hell? They were doing Jimmy Eat World and My Chemical Romance. I was like, yeah, but to a 25-year-old, Papa Roach is kind of the same thing, in the same way that the Strokes are kind of the closest thing that we have to a classic rock band now, because they're older and they're cooler, but they like still have songs that rip.
Okay. Did you think it's like the whole the garage rock revival that them and Interpol were kind of at the forefront of? Do you think that like especially like being in my early 20s when that happened, and like all those bands that kind of just arrived out of nowhere, and having kind of at least a retro sensibility, do you think that it part of it is the fact that they so like tapped in on a sentiment that at least in like the year 2004 and five, like felt like that they were kind of trying to be the Rolling Stones of like this kind of things, makes it much more easier to lump them into it than acts that I would put around like that kind of movement, like LCD Sound System at the same time?
Yeah, because I think the production on it is closer to an older band than an LCD Sound System is, or like the Yeah Yeah Yeahs are of their contemporaries. But even if you move up a generation to like MGMT or whatever, you know, that is, for people my age, that's still like a cool retro song, but not in the same way that the Strokes are, where they have these really cool older songs. The other thing is, people might like so the Strokes have a record coming out, but they put out an album in 2020 that had legitimate hits on it, that people my age were like, I like this new Strokes album. And so I went with my girlfriend, who had never seen the Strokes before, and the stuff that she was popping for was less the stuff on Is This It and Room on Fire, and more like, oh, the stuff from 2020 that got me into the Strokes, that's what I really wanted to hear. So it's like a multi-generational band at this point, where you can be into Hard to Explain or Reptilia or Ode to the Mets or whatever, or the Adults Are Talking, whatever else is on that record. So, but I noticed it there, like that Stroke show, 22,000 people at the United Center, it was people in their 20s, more so than people in their 40s. That's a young person's band for whatever reason.
Yeah, it just seems like the more I kind of like let it like sink in, it rings around in my head and I go like, okay, yes, no, I think that the Strokes, it makes sense why they would have this kind of revival. I'm still the Papa Roach saying that they're emo, when like would these same people say the same thing about Linkin Park being emo? I guess they would.
Yeah,
because
I think Linkin Park is like, yeah, like to an, I don't, uninformed is the wrong word, but like,
okay, Korn would be my question.
Korn is not emo. I'm gonna use just Gen Pop 26-year-old, just likes music to like a normal degree. Korn is not emo. Linkin Park would be emo adjacent. Papa Roach, Last Resort specifically, would Fair. Be emo.
And I feel like it would just dial into, I guess, the unclean vocal aspect of it all.
Maybe. So there's a DJ in Chicago, this guy Greg Corner, who used to be in the band Kill Hannah. He's a very nice guy. Yeah, very, very nice guy. And is a very popular DJ here. And I was once talking to him at a show that he was DJing at. He was doing like in between sets, in between bands he was DJing. And he told me, he goes, watch what happens when I start this next DJ set. Watch what happens when I play Lit My Own Worst Enemy. Because he was playing all emo songs. It was Fall Out Boy and you know, My Chem and whatever else. And he goes, I have to play My Own Worst Enemy now. It's the same thing as the Papa Roach thing, where it's like Lit, it's not like Lit has ties to the emo community, but people now expect, when they're at any sort of emo night, they expect to hear My Own Worst Enemy, because it's been canonically considered now to be an emo song. He goes, watch what happens when I play it. The place is going to lose their mind. And then I watch him play it, and everybody in that room, all 4,000 people, even though that song sucks, people lost their minds for it.
Yeah, no, it's interesting how people kind of form like those links and to do it. Because now I'm like going through acts, and as someone that, like, I'm no Murder Brian, but I was thoroughly into a lot of the new metal acts, especially in that like wave there. I'm going like, okay, Godsmack, Edema, like Godsmack's not necessarily full new metal, but like in my brain now, I want to sit down a Zoomer and ask them like which ones of these acts are emo or not, because like this is in some ways like how watching 3/31/06 like completely changed the way I looked at pro wrestling, that this is like a real foundation shattering thing you've laid upon me just to start off the show this week, buddy.
And then it's weird what bands have cachet with young people and mm-hmm. what don't, because like Godsmack means nothing to somebody in their 20s. That is not a band that has crossed
well,
over generations
shouldn't.
At all. Well, I know, but they were here this past weekend. There was a Godsmack Stone Temple Pilots tour, and I can't imagine a worse evening of music. But they were
Sully
there.
Erna in 2026 doing that just sounds real depressing. And there's going to be some real shouting about stuff that I just don't feel like I need to hear.
No, but like, you know, Limp Bizkit is cool. Godsmack is unheard of. Like it's weird the way that worked. And then, you know, you have STP who... I always say with them, it's amazing that they wrote Interstate Love Song, because that song is so good, and yet they did nothing else like it, and as a result, I don't like anything else they've ever done. That is not a band that I enjoy outside of that one specific song that doesn't sound like anything else they ever did.
Yeah, is grunge emo to these kids?
Is grunge emo? That's a good question.
Nirvana's got to be emo using this logic.
But Nirvana's a punk band, and I always like, this is a big thing that my friend Sean Sloan and I talk about, is we don't like grunge bands that much. Like I tolerate Alice in Chains mainly. The discrepancy between like a good Alice in Chains song and a bad Alice in Chains song is so huge, because Wood,
oh absolutely, yeah,
like Wood and Man in a Box are incredible, no excuses, incredible song. But Rooster and Dumb Bones, it's an immediate like, I'm a head out, I don't want to hear this at all. And then Pearl Jam, I've never really cared about outside of some of the covers they've done and some of the softer Pearl Jam songs. Like I wish every Pearl Jam song sounded like State of Love and Trust, but that's kind of an outlier in the entire thing. And then it's funny, I'm helping produce a Kim Thayil interview later this week, the guitarist from Soundgarden, but like I'm not crazy about Soundgarden. The reason that I like Nirvana is that they're a punk band and they have punk sensibilities, and I don't like those grunge bands. I don't think young people think grunge bands are emo. I think grunge is its own marketing tool still. I still think people resonate with the word grunge, and they resonate with the word emo, but they don't really resonate with the word punk right now. Like, punk isn't a thing. I don't hear people describe things as punk right now.
Yeah, and I feel like that the avenues that you would see punk, like, really kind of flourish and, like, the punk, like, culture flourish, I think you're seeing other cultures flourish with those nowadays, especially like skateboarding and the such. Like it's moved a lot less, a lot more out of it. And I think that for something like skateboarding, that's only natural. That's evolution, and that's globalism, and that's great. But like it feels like that places that you would really kind of like see that just don't exist anymore, at least in the English speaking world. There could be all kinds of pop punk bands happening overseas that I would not be surprised to hear from, but it just feels like that, actually, yeah, like punk's moment feels somewhat older, like over. Like I cannot imagine what Henry Rollins' radio show sounds like today. He's still doing it, but
yeah,
like,
the bummer with Rollins is that he's just sort of a stick in the mud, and I like him, but he's never evolved into like I don't know if Rollins has heard a 21st century band. That's just not something he's gonna do.
No. And I don't think Rollins has like formulated mostly a new view on things since 1985.
And
I mean, his direction in 1985 ended up being mostly right. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't blame him too much on this, but I do think it's like notable that I feel like if you listen or pick up any Henry Rollins books nowadays, it's probably the tone and the content is the exact same as if you picked one up during the W eras, which is like my peaked Henry Rollins like time. For me, frankly. Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned skateboarding, because that in itself is going through such a weird identity crisis right now, where all of a sudden there are these very pro-cop right-wing skateboarders that are like very famous that now are taking... They have some level of influence in skateboarding that's taking it in a direction that obviously I don't agree with, but now there's like another contingent, because you obviously have the Olympic stuff, which has already split skateboarding really bad. And it was never like oh, the X Games are universally beloved, or YouTube or Dutour is universally beloved, but now there's this other extra emphasis on contests, but the contests have like referees and there are team names. And I just read a good thing from Nora Vasconcelos, who's a professional skateboarder. She's like, why is skateboarding trying to be the UFC? Like, I thought we were supposed to make fun of like team sports and all of these losers, and now everybody just wants to be the UFC. Like, what the fuck happened? This is not what I got into skateboarding for. So yes, punk very much on the downturn. Emo is ambiguous. Grunge is still grunge. And Korn is still bad. I think that is what we can take away from this.
Yeah, I think we've done some real solid work here, Case. Now we have to, you know, make sense of Dragon Gate in 2020.
I can't do that. I can explain why Papa Roach is kind of considered to be an emo band now. I cannot make sense of 2026 Dragon Gate. Mike, this promotion sucks right now.
Yeah, like it's really indefensible the weekend that they had in Hakata. They had a double shot. I previewed it last week and I was trying to be optimistic about certain things, and boy, after watching 4 hours of Dragon Gate and Hakata, I wonder, Case, are we ever going to move the plot forward in cities outside of Tokyo again? Like, it feels like if you want something to happen in this company now, it has to only be in Cork and Hall, because nothing has changed from in Dragon Gate from the end of the second Cork and at the start of the month until right now. It's been 18 days and we're still in the exact same spot we were.
Even with one match between these two shows that I would put as a low level 4-star match, and this would be, you know, it is going to be entered into the notebook, there's still just nothing essential from these shows. There's nothing that you have to see for yourself, either from a quality standpoint or from a storyline standpoint. If you don't watch these shows, you can catch up just by listening to Jay and Ho-Ho during the Cork and preview time on the next Cork and show. But there's nothing that is happening where it's like, oh, well, I got to stop everything. I got to make sure that I consume this. I have to stop what I'm doing and make sure that I like this promotion. I got to see what's happening here.
Case, they repeated the exact same angles that they did in Gifu on these shows twice.
And it's not one of those where it's like, you know, you could be critical. I'll use peak Gato as the example, not modern day Gato. But, you know, we would sometimes laugh at the idea of, okay, they're going to get the... I remember specifically there was that G1 where Bad Luck Fale was in it, and they're like, we're going to get the Bad Luck Fall over. Every single G1 match he has, he's going to win with the Bad Luck Fall, and his opponent is going to get stretchered out. And it might get grating because we're watching all of this footage, and by night 7, you're like, all right, I stretch out Togi Makabe already. Like, I got what's happening here. But it will eventually pay off either at the end of that tournament or on the next tour, and you'll understand why you went through all of that, even if at times, in this consumption era that we're living in, it is a little monotonous to consume all of that. But this isn't one of those deals where I have faith of, okay, well, they're repeating this angle, so I know where it's going to go. I trust that we're going to get some level of payoff here. I trust that this is going to be worth it in the long run. I have no trust. I have no faith. I do not like this promotion right now. And it's a very, I talked about this 2 weeks ago, but it's a very odd thing where right now when I'm watching it, I'm having a hard time analyzing some of this stuff because I can't tell if what I'm watching is just bad or if what I'm watching is just not what I would do. But I do feel a lot of clarity coming out of these two Fukuoka shows that a lot of what I watched was not only not what I would do, but a lot of it was bad. And I feel very comfortable saying that now, as we're less than a month away from Kobe World. And I find the build to this show at this point in time, and maybe things will change once we get through Korakuen and something actually happens, Mike, I find the build to Kobe World right now to be an outright disaster.
Yeah, and like, you look around at how things are. So Kobe World will be on July 20th on a Monday.
It's a Monday. It's a Monday, everybody. Just remember that.
Yeah, it's a Monday. It's a holiday in Japan. And we have only 2.5 matches announced. We have the Dreamgate match, which will be Madoka Kakuta making a sixth defense against the winner of El Cielo and KZ, who both don't feel like that they made a huge step forward on these Okada shows, but they're going to be facing off on the 2nd in Cork and Hall, and that's going to be the main event. And then Ryoya Tanaka and Hamare right after Tanaka defeated Doi. He called out for number 12, and then we had that promo happen. Nothing has progressed in those two storylines since Cork and Hall shows, but we do know that the next Open the Triangle Gate champion will be decided at Kobe World. We don't know what teams, we don't know how it is going to be decided, if it's going to be a tournament, if it's going to be just like two qualifying matches, what have you, three qualifying matches, but it feels like it is mission critical at this point with this promotion, the fact that they just seem like that they're not bothering to plan for their biggest show of the year and their biggest building of the year. And it's just, it makes me wonder, like, are we just like, is the injury situation so bad that we are just trying to figure out stuff on the fly? Shun's being hard to book for. So for like his appearance there, which Shun's not going to be on the Cork and next Thursday, by the way, but like, it's just like making sense of this promotion. And it's like, is Ryo Saito, who is the shoot GM of this promotion, tanking this year? Because there's no draft picks happening in Japanese pro wrestling, at least last time I checked, Case. And because it feels like that is outright criminal negligence to be less than a month away from your biggest show of the year, and you only have two matches booked, and you're not really doing anything to build those storylines and to build those challengers into being credible challengers at Kobe World. I mean, I basically last week, the company is in such a state that I decided to go back and watch a lot of PAC matches, because there's just nothing going on here, and we're a month away from Kobe World.
I mean, you say the injury situation, but I understand what you're saying, but just to be clear, it's Shimizu and Ben are the guys on the shelves right now. I'm not forgetting anybody else, am I?
Kato got pulled. After
oh, did he? I didn't
Hakata.
See that.
But it says it's minor, and Kamei is not. I haven't seen Kamei on anything since Hakata either.
Okay, but at the very least, they were on Hakata. So we're talking about right. if Dragon Gate wants to make the claim of the injury situation. I gave them the run-up to Golden Coliseum with Shimizu's injury to be like, you know what? That sucks. That is a bummer. Shimizu was very clearly supposed to be doing huge stuff at the top of the card this year. But Shimizu also now hasn't wrestled since February. And Ben K, God bless him, I miss him, obviously. It's not like he was being pushed as the guy that was going to dethrone Kakuta before he got hurt. So to not have a Kobe World plan is still gross malpractice, because if Shimizu was going to be involved, and for as great as he was in January, I do have a hard time believing that Big Boss Shimizu was going to headline Kobe World this year. You now have had enough
Neither
time to
I.
pivot away from that. And you've got Benkei, who was going to be in an undercard Triangle Gate match at best, and now he's not there. And so there was a time earlier in the year where it was like, boom, injury, boom, injury, boom, injury. Ah, this really sucks. But they've now been pretty healthy since April. And April with Golden Coliseum should have been the time to really get your ducks in the row and go into Kobe World strong. And I mean, there's so many holes in this promotion that you can pick through. It's an odd thing in that I've said since March, when my antennas really got up. I felt like Joe Lanza watching the Dynamite with Omega and Vikingo 4 years ago, where they had the red, white, and blue ropes, and he went, hey, something is going on with this promotion. We all need to pay attention to it. Something not good is happening. My antennas went up in March, where I went, something feels really, really off right now. And the comparison point has always been probably World 2017 through April 2018 with the split. That sort of 11-month run to me is the weakest point in the promotion's history. You could maybe point to some things in 2006 or 2009, but that's the period that I always associate the absolute worst of Dragon Gate with. Even then, you know, the in-ring quality really suffered during that point. The booking was at best a lot of the time boring, and then outright bad, depending on what your level of the heel involvement, of the heel unit involvement was at that point. I don't feel like it was as incompetent as it is right now, though. There is just pro wrestling 101 things not happening on these shows that I can't get over. I can't believe that the finish to the second night in Fukuoka's main event, which was Kakuta and Ishin versus Cielo and KZ, I can't believe that that match ended with Kakuta pinning Cielo and not either Cielo or KZ pinning Ishin. Does that not feel like the biggest layup in the world? How do you pin one of the challengers?
Oh, it completely makes both of them look like that they aren't at the level. And the entire match was essentially Kakuta eating up the challengers for like about a good portion of it. And then KZ and Cielo not being on the same page and not having the chemistry of being not on the same page, just not having chemistry.
Just kind of like, it's funny. It's funny you say that. And
it was a bad main event. I was 2¾ stars on this, and that's me being charitable.
And I actually liked the match from a Raw in-ring perspective more than you did. I thought the work was better than that. I'm glad you said that, though, because I felt watching it like the Cielo-KZ friendly fire, arguing with their like, teammate spots. It wasn't earned. It was weird how flat all of it was.
There was like a moment where KZ like shoves off Cielo to do a tiger twist, and Cielo kind of just stumbles around and just like throws up his hands and goes to the outside. And it's like, what are we doing here? Like, it is completely like, the one thing I could say is that Cielo being larger and being able to fly around, that's a dynamic that has not been tapped into enough with Kakuta. So there's that aspect that's dangling that. But Case, I am mining to pull out that one positive with this. I just thought that this is just a complete dredge, and it was after a four-way that essentially existed just to do another story, to do another Minoru and Yoshioka bailing each other out, but they're not uniting like this. We're teasing that we're edging this out another week with this, and instead of going like, okay, Yoshioka and Minoru versus Team 204, like, that's, we need to get to that point, and they just refuse to. It was one of my least favorites. The evening session I thought was worse than the afternoon, and the afternoon I at least had a great main event, like the great, but like, that's the only thing, like, from like a matchwork standpoint, that I feel even remotely comfortable saying, yeah, you might want to check that out. And that is with the caveat of might.
So I want to go back in time in just a second before we continue breaking down what was a pretty abysmal weekend for the company. But I was thinking about this about an hour before we started recording tonight, where if you look at your title situations in Dragon Gate, and you can't really look at anything else because there's no other programs going on, which is a huge issue in this company, is that these undercards right now are so dry, especially when Kimura's not in the match. Because at least if you give me Kimura in an opening match, I'm in. Because I think Kimura, that guy works his ass off on every show. That guy's awesome.
He is way too good to be in his position that he's kind of has to be in because Tsuchiguchi and Oshima aren't being promoted up. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like, Kimura really feels like that he should be in the mix at like this. And he was so much fun, like, working with Cielo and Yoshioka in that opening that, And then on this, the second night, like, the one thing that was interesting happening in that match was, okay, we got a lot of Kimura there. And all that it made me want to do was say, like, yeah, Kimura's great. He's almost coming up to his 1-year anniversary. Why is he not in a unit and we're not moving along here? Oh, wait, you can't promote people up through your dojo because your issues don't just exist in your booking office. They exist up and down the entirety of your promotion, right?
Completely. So there's all these issues there. But when I look at the title situation, I go, okay, Kakuta aligned in Gaja Dokuro. That's been going on for a year. That's well established. There's a chance that he wrestles KZ, who is this weird leader who's not a leader of a unit that's existed for a long time. But there's also a chance that he wrestles LCLO, who would be unaffiliated going into Kobe World, which is, it's odd. It's extremely odd to have a Dreamgate challenger who's unaffiliated going into Kobe World. And then you look at the Bravegate match, and it's going to be an unaffiliated Tanaka against an unaffiliated Homare. And then, you know, we don't know what they're going to do with the Triangle Gate belts yet. They'll probably have fucking All Japan guys come in and win them, or Genki Horiguchi will win and pin everybody. But you look at the Twin Gate match, and I would presume, as I think you would, that it's going to be Ishin and Kato versus Yoshioka and Minoura. And yes. Mike, I don't think we're getting some massive unit rollout in July for Yoshioka and Minoura, which means they're going to go in unaffiliated as well. So you're going to, let's say it's Kakuta versus Cielo. Cielo, Homare, Tanaka, Yoshioka, and Minoura will all be in title matches without units. Think about how weird that is. I talk about the delicate balance of booking in this company all the time, about how Magnum Tokyo being in two units at once in 2005 nearly threw off the entire equilibrium of this company. There was something about Dragon Gate where the booking has to be specific. We talked about in 2019 when they put Shun Skywalker and Benkei together as a tag team without a unit name, different than D-Courage. This was not Daya and Yoshioka as D-Courage as a tag team. This was Shun Skywalker and Benkei are unaffiliated friends that occasionally tag together. And we talked about how weird that was and how it threw off the balance of this company. And you might have five guys in title matches on Kobe World that won't be able to wear a unit t-shirt to the ring.
Oh, this is not when Lanza used to say, this is not your big brother's Dragon Gate. Like, this is like the moral soul adjusting thing of like, this is not what this promotion should be at all.
No, I clenched my fist with anger when he said that in 2021. I thank God he's not watching now. I don't want to know what he would say, because I hate this promotion right now.
And it at least, like, looking in that overall situation, like, Homare and Tanaka feel like such a clear direction that it seems like it would almost be a war crime at this point if we weren't, like, basically, if not after the Brave Gate match, then whatever. Oh, they have a Kobe Sambo Hall show that week too. That's great. If they're not at the Kobe Sambo Hall show saying like, all right, we're uniting for a generation or whatever, then it's just like, what are we doing? Are we just tearing apart the fabric of what this promotion has been for the last 29 years or 27 years?
I don't
years?
Know. I mean, Mike, I don't trust Tomari to be involved with anything. The guy hasn't won on TV since April. He has not won a match on TV since he got his head shaved. So what I keep on talking about, I don't understand this character. I don't understand why he's wrestling for the Brave Gate belt. Put Flamita back in there. Just give Flamita another shot. Why is Homari in that match?
Now, I'm with you on with that. And it's even like, you have Flamita on these shows. The first night, Flamita has to team with Ultimo in a match that just was all crowd work. And then he gets into the Natural Vibes versus Paradox 8-man tag, and that was fine. That was the best thing on that show here. But it's like, we all know that Flamita being around for whatever reason makes the company feel a little better, but they're not even using the guy at like his best right now. And it feels like that, well, he could be in the Triangle Gate situation with Gucci and Aki, or he could be doing something with Monte and just being kind of weirdly unaffiliated once again.
Here's what I want to do here. Let's go back in time for a minute. We'll jump back to 2026, and we'll talk about sort of the three big storylines happening in the company right now and what went right, which was very little, and what went wrong with all of those. But I want to go back in time to July of 2025, and I want to look at that Korakuen card from July 3rd, 2025. I'm going to read you the full card. You can give me just any impression you have then. And then I want to go name by name for the relevant guys on the roster. So we'll omit, you know, your BB Hulks and your Don Fujis and your Ultimo Dragons. But for the relevant guys on the roster, you tell me, and I'll go name by name with you, if they're in a better spot, a worse spot, or the same spot from a booking perspective, from a public perception perspective, from a career perspective, better, worse, or the same than they were at this time last year. Does that make sense?
Yeah, let's do it.
We've done this before. We did this probably, I think we did this in 2024, and we were marveling at how many guys were in a better spot than they were in the summer of 2023. This will be a different exercise than that. But that card for Aggressive Gate last year was Monte and Tanaka versus Flamita and UT. It was a 10-man tag with Kagetora, Susumu, BB Hulk, Don Fuji, and Ultimo Dragon versus Daiki Yanagiuchi, Masaki Mochizuki, Problem Dragon, Punch Tamanaga, and Takashi. Rita versus Bendito in a singles match. KZ and Strong Machine J versus Kai and Madoka Kakuta. Benkei, Hyo, Jackie Kame, and Mochizuki Jr. versus Ishin, Jason, Lee, Coach Minoru, and Yoshiki Kato. Dragon Kid and Naruki Doi versus Daya and Yoshioka. Yamato versus Hanare. And then your impromptu main event, Shun Skywalker versus Yamato. And that set up the Kobe World main event for that year. So that was 1 year ago in Korakuen Hall. That's what this company was doing. Ryoya Tanaka. Better, worse, or the same than this time last year?
I would argue that Ryoya Tanaka will be one of the few people that will say better. Like, we can't debate this. Like,
the biggest victor of the last calendar year is Tanaka.
Yeah, no, like, he's the only person I would go two arrows up on. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just that he's up good, he's up, but like two standard deviations of good. Like, why aren't we to, like, his presence was missed on the Hakata shows, not to completely side rail, because he was doing Billy King Kid's anniversary show, you know. Like, he's in a great position, you know. Ryoya Tanaka doing great.
I gotta look at that card now. We're probably not gonna get this in any form or fashion, which is a bummer.
Yeah.
Billy King Kid, Ryoya Tanaka, and Ryuya Matsufusa versus Rogue Nation, Goliath Toru, and Yasutaka Osara. I would really like to see that match.
Oh, yeah. I would like to see Osara versus Tanaka. I would.
Luis Monte.
Oh, he's in the exact same damn place he was in. Maybe a little worse because they had Team Mexico happening last year.
That's where I landed, is I think Monte's in a worse position because the passage of time with him is absolutely brutal. I mean, this guy won the Final Gate, or he won the Dream Gate belt at Final Gate 2023. He lost it in June of 2024. 2 years ago. Mike, that Benkei versus Monte match was 2 years ago. What has he done in the last 2 years? Big Hug cratered in November of 2024. He did the Mexico versus Japan stuff, which I was the biggest fan of, because I talked a lot last year about how this felt like a throwaway gimmick. It felt like the type of thing that they did because they didn't have an idea for Monte. But those matches were so good that it reminded me how good Monte was and how good Flamita was and how good Rito was. But now he doesn't have that. And now we're 2 years removed from him being Dreamgate champion, and we're 18 months removed from him being in a unit. I think the public perception of Monte, Mike, this is a guy who you and I used to come on here and we used to go, thank God that AEW and WWE don't pay attention to Dragon Gate, because they would take Diamante in a heartbeat and they would ruin him. But we're 2 years removed from that now. He's done nothing.
Oh, no. I mean, we've gone from the guy that was probably by consensus for Dragon Gate viewers the most improved wrestler, not just in 1 year, but over a period of 3 years, each year it would be like, oh yeah, no, Monte's even better than he was than last year. He's the most improved wrestler. And now he is adrift. Ultimo likes working with him, so he's usually in or against Ultimo. But like, that's not a future I would want to have if I was a former Dreamgate champion and someone that, like, Monte's only like 30 and it feels like he's completely like shuffled down to the veterans and Ultimo. And that's an awful place to be, at least for your momentum. And in considering where he was, which was already kind of down cycled in 2025, he's arrow down.
I just have such a hard time believing that his career arc should be on the latter half of it, that we should be on the down arrow with him, because it's not like he's a bad wrestler. Whenever they give him something to do, he's still the best base in wrestling.
Mm-hmm. He's amazing. He is one of the great big men in that wrestle lucha style in the world that no one's heard of, and he's been thoroughly like wasted for the last 24 months. Actually, let me rephrase that. Last 18 months, Big Hug just cratered with that. That was an attempt for something, but the point still stands. Over the last 2 years, there's probably been no one who has dropped as much as Luis Monte.
No, former Dreamgate champion. If you turn on a Dreamgate show today, you would have no idea that that was the case. And that it wasn't that long ago. That it wasn't like one of these reigns from 20 years ago. That it was not, you know, he beat Skywalker and Kakuta in a three-way match, which I was right on the money that was a fucking disaster. It was a terrible booking decision. They fucked everybody over on that. They rushed to do Monte versus Skywalker at Bayside when I thought that should have been something that they were building to for Kobe World that year. Just bad all the way around. Didn't feel good in the moment. Only feels worse in hindsight. Flamita and UT I would have in the same spot. Would you agree there?
Yeah, I mean, UT, I guess he was technically Bravegate champion there, so it would be a slight arrow down. But I mean, essentially, everyone knew what the deal was that Bravegate run.
Handled well. I don't think we're going like, oh God, what are they doing with you? I think he's earned a very respected position on the roster. He is a veteran presence. I have no issue with what they've done with UT. I think it's awesome that he's gotten the amount of Bravegate matches he's gotten. He won it. He had the junior match. He's had the two Tanaka matches. But our public perception of UT is not changing. I just like when they do stuff with him.
Right. And I would say that UT, if you're looking at like where he is within Natural Vibes, even with like the younger guys kind of moving up that came in there, like he's in a spot that, I mean, if we want to take it and stretch it out across UT's career, UT's doing all right right now. UT's in a much better spot than he was 5 or 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I completely agree with that. Daiki Yanagiuchi, I think we would both agree. Up, I would say second to Tanaka in terms of improvement over the last year. Now, their ceilings are dramatically different, but, you know, I always bang the drum on this guy, but I don't think a lot of people saw Daiki Yanagiuchi as...
a goober.
You were always in goober territory with him. I would say in 2026, as we're halfway through the year, which is terrifying on a number of levels. Is Yanagiuchi a top three Dragon Gate wrestler this year?
Yeah, I would say so.
Tanaka, Kame, Gyuchi?
It would be hard for me to go after Kame, anyone other than Gyuchi, unless you want to do the joint Kame and Rita kind of in the same place together, you know? Mm.
And I don't, as I will explain in this exercise. I have them in different spots for this exercise. But Gyuchi, big winner there. Rita, I have him in a better position than he was in last year. I think he is now in the same, like kind of what you were just saying. I think last year at this time, it was Kame on a different level than Rita. And I think Rita has closed that gap with the work that he's done. I would say no help to Dragon Gate's booking. I still think he's been handled horribly, but I think he has worked so hard and has done so much good work that now people see him on a different level than they did at this time last year.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And I think a level of credit should be also the fact that he kind of has been able to explore a lot more than just being the smallest guy. And I think working with Jackie has let him kind of flesh it out. Like, because there's a few things that I think is more fun in Dragon Gate than when, or in wrestling, to be honest, than when Rita decides that he wants to kind of bully someone around on the mat. And those were the kinds of things we weren't necessarily seeing like 2024 and into 2025 that first we got to see on the Buyuden shows, but he's been incorporating that more. And I think that that's been a big positive for him. Yeah, I would go up for Rita.
Now, as I go in order of this card, we go to match four, and that would be your opinion on where Casey stands, a man who is possibly headlining Kobe World.
Yeah, man.
What do you think there?
So the thing with KZ is he's a tentative thumbs up until next Thursday when he loses to LCLO. If he loses LCLO, then it's not an arrow up. If he is in the main event of Kobe World, it is a clear arrow up for him. But I feel like KZ's now kind of slotted in this kind of position. And with Natural Vibes being what it is at this point, until Natural Vibes ends, he's kind of going to be where he's at, unless they decide for some reason that that the ripcord is pulled and it's time for KZ time. And I think that will end the exact same way it's going to probably end with CLO. But I think I'm a tentative arrow up until Thursday, basically.
I think it's scary that this guy, to me, is in the exact same position he was in last year, because it's not like we needed KZ for anything huge at this moment in time. And, you know, it felt like we were going to give Strong Machine Jay the reins and really let him go and be the leader of this unit. And for whatever reason, that has just not happened in the way that I think any of us thought that it would be. And if you go back and look at the Kobe World card last year, Mike, do you remember, without looking, do you remember what KZ did on Kobe World? Because I had to look this up. I never would have guessed this.
Was KZ like in a outsiders match? No, Tanahashi was the outsider last year at World. Was he like teaming with Flamita for the Twin Gate?
No, that was 2 years ago. God, that was fun. That was that four-way tag that I don't know why it came up recently, but I was like, oh, that's that. Oh, I was doing some, I think, some Kame Twin Gate stuff, and I was reminded of how good that match was, because that was Kame and Mate challenging for those belts. No, last year, Kobe World, five-way Gaiora TV title match, Takashi, Kai, KZ, Masaki Mochizuki, and Naruki Doi. And I think KZ is in the same spot that he was in last year, and he might be headlining for the Dreamgate belt. That should concern everybody.
Yeah, it's he's just so, like, to me, is so hard slotted that, like, other than and I've never necessarily, you know, seen it natively or heard about it natively, but, like, it feels like that he's, like, being teased as anything to just, like, oh, that will shut people up if KZ has an opportunity to main event Kobe World and get another Dreamgate shot, when it just feels like it's throwing things at the wall at this point to me.
I have a question for you that I'm just now thinking about, and this is probably the type of thing that maybe if I was good at my job, I would wait and we would just discuss this once we figured out the result of KZ versus Cielo, but we're in it now, and I think this is a more interesting discussion than any individual thing that happened on the Fukuoka show. Mm-hmm. Do you think it is detrimental to the health of Dragon Gate if KZ, who for so long has been the guy that hasn't been good enough to win and is looked at as the second of two wrestlers in his class, with Yamato being the other one, and has been the guy that Shun has already defeated and Yamato's defeated multiple times and has lost and lost and lost and lost and lost in the big spot. If he now wins with the company in the precarious position that it's in, is that more of a feel-good story for Dragon Gate and KZ, or is it a cause of concern that this guy, who we all love, but has been portrayed and painted a certain way throughout his entire career, is now the one atop the company? Because I'm starting to worry that it might be the latter, that KZ winning the Dreamgate belt might actually be way more sad than it is satisfying.
It, like, in a way, it feels like that it's a manufactured kind of thing to me, because outside of him stepping into the ring after, as soon as Cielo did, there was, like, no real impetus for him to make a Dreamgate challenge whatsoever. And there's a part of me, and maybe I am giving Ryo Saito too much credit in this instance, and maybe I am not giving him enough credit in this instance. I think that there's a part of me that goes, did he see what happened with Hirooki Goto and the fact that they were able to kind of spur on someone that would argue would be the KZ type in that promotion and actually have a somewhat of a positive run with the guy, and hoping, like, maybe this is, like, the little kick in the pants of going, like, maybe if it's, like, KZ time, then we saw with Hirooki Goto, maybe that can be a little bit of positive momentum there. And it just feels like such a bad read of the situation that happened there before to emulate to me. And it, at the end of the day, it makes me wonder, like, are we overthinking this? And KZ is just the natural guy for that in a role to be fed to Cielo? Or is this kind of, as you're saying, like, is this like a attempt at something that comes off a little bit sad? Because I don't see the logic, and I don't think either way necessarily is a strong kind of thing, because like, if Cielo, if they wanted Cielo to feel good going into Kobe World, he needs to beat the shit out of Yoshiki Kato and cross that guy off the list and go, all right, I'm done with the spares here. I'm coming for the big bad. Wouldn't you feel a lot better about Cielo going into World if that's the route we went to get there?
Especially because I don't feel like Cielo versus Kato is strong enough to headline a big show for the Dreamgate belt. That is the perfect stepping stone match, not the Chapter 2 match.
Right. At least that's kind of the way that it just feels like, why are we going to still have this thing dangling in a way? Because like, why not? Why not clean this up? Have like Cielo get that thing, check that off. We don't have the whole, oh, you escaped the cage first. Why should I concern myself with him? Like, he needs to feel a little bit like a badass, and he's not feeling like a badass.
And then if you, let's say they are inspired by that Goto reign, which after he beat Zack, he defended the belt against Tanahashi and then Nagata, and then went Finley, Umino, Newman, newer guys, and then back to Zack, Shingo, and then lost it to Zack. If they were going to copy that blueprint, you're talking about what, like a KZ versus Mochizuki Dreamgate match and KZ versus Yamato, who, by the way, some of the greatest Dreamgate matches in history, KZ versus Yamato, KZ versus Mochizuki. Mm-hmm. I do not want to see that in 2026. I think that is bad. I think that is a horrible look for Dragon Gate if you do that. I thought it was... I was less high on that Goto reign than everybody else was, because I think for a lot of people, it's like, with glory days of New Japan, I was like, brother, that was 10 years ago. What are you doing now? And I think the KZ thing, I think the more I think about it, the more sad at this point in time a KZ Dreamgate run would be, because the arrow is pointing down in so many ways that now would be, it wouldn't be KZ reaching the top of this super high mountain, this, you know, mecca of Japanese wrestling that Dragon has been. It would have reached the top of a much shorter mountain that is less of a triumph and more of just like, oh, okay. I think that would be a really bad look for the company if KZ won.
No, I'm with you on it. And it just kind of, I still just don't see it as like this credible chip for Cielo.
No. I mean, Cielo's not ready for this spot. They haven't done anything to make me think that Cielo is a main eventer, let alone a Dreamgate champion. The crazy thing is, Mike, the booking of this Dreamgate scene, especially coming out of Fukuoka, honest to God, at the end of these two shows, I went, maybe Kakuta should retain in Kobe. That's how bad this has been.
Yeah, it just does not feel like how this company has been. It really, like, I know I joke around about it. I wonder if there's a gas leak at the dojo right now that they're just not checking on, because it's just like, maybe it is that we're so in the weeds with this after so long, Case, that like, we have a sentiment of what feels like right and wrong, and that, and maybe we should not be feeling like empowered that we should say that. But like, I just, if any promotion like AEW was looking at Wembley Stadium or looking at their biggest show of the year, if WrestleMania was a month away, and that those promotions were at the position that Dragon Gate is in right now before their biggest show of the year, I feel like people will be shouting the mountaintops, because it is almost malicious how it's being handled.
It's the weakest build to World I've ever seen. I mean, I'm going to go back now and look at Kobe World 2006. I'm just curious to see...
I mean, six had like, you had the DK and Susumu stuff and
which
and
felt Shima's like a week. Main event. Yeah, so that has Dos Caras, BB Hulk, Yoshi versus Takagi, Muscle Outlaws versus Blood Generation. So this is an interesting card, because you, at the very least, you get this big Muscle Outlaws versus Blood Generation match. Dr. Muscle, Gamma, Masato Yoshino, Naoki Tanizaki, and Naruki Doi versus Don Fuji, Jack Evans, Matt Sydal, Roderick Strong, and Yasushi Kanda. That had some build to it. Yoshie versus Shingo, which is a match I don't like. At the very least, had some intrigue of Shingo coming back to Japan, or Shingo leaving for Excursion right after that match. Third from the top, Tenryu and Magnum versus Masaki Mochizuki and Minoru Suzuki, a match that I like, but a match that was very divisive. And then your top two, Dreamgate match, Susumu versus Dragon Kid, and Shima versus Magnitude Kishiwada in a no ropes match. A great Dreamgate match that I think had a pretty weak build. And then Shima versus Magnitude, which felt, you know, while it was the worst of, if there's a Nokiism, then there's Shimaism. And that was probably the worst of Shimaism, but a match that felt big. I mean, it's an undeniably good match and a hot crowd. So a match that was built for
well over a year at that point?
Yes. Yeah. Because Magnitude comes in June of 2005. So you were telling a 13-month long story, and you get that Muscle Outlaws versus Blood Generation match on the card. And at the very least, again, Susumu versus DK, you might go, okay, well, it's not Yamato versus Shingo from 2016. It's not Yamato versus Shun from last year. But you know what? That's an inoffensive Dreamgate match. I would kill for inoffensive on this year's Kobe World with any of the matches that we've got going on. I'm offended by everything they've done. So it's Kobe World 2006 is a weaker Kobe World show that at the very least is far less annoying than anything happening in 2026.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's befuddling, man. Who was next on your stock up list?
Yeah, I still want to go through some of these. I know this is taking a while, but I want to go through some of these because I want to throw the next name at you specifically. Strong Machine J, year over year. Your thoughts, Mike?
I mean, he's down because how can you not be down? Which is wild considering that he got knocked out at Kobe World last year in a no DQ match and like one of the more like devastatingly ways to get Kakuta over as that heel. But like I've said my spiel about Strong Machine J a while back. He's easily the least interesting person in the unit that he's supposed to be leading. He is completely kind of adrift. I don't know where you kind of book him. You can't really get rid of the Strong Machine J gimmick because then what do you do with the guy after he's unmasked when there's like no real impetus for him to kind of unmask? He's just down, and I don't, and it's like even like such to a point that's like, would Strong Machine J turning on Natural Vibes be something? I don't know, but he needs something, and it's just like, because the more people who get added into Natural Vibes and are showing up, the more you're kind of going, why is this guy the leader? Why is this guy front and center? Why did KZ do that? It makes it, if anything, that this guy has cratered over the last 3 years as unit leader. And why are we even like entertaining this at this point? He needs some big change. And I don't know if the big change is going to be the thing that has him even come close to any level of interest that he had in past years. Like, this is a multiple time Dreamgate challenger that is completely just up a creek in it, and just feels just like lagging behind in a way that feels almost terminal in some fashions.
Mike, think about Strong Machine J going into Gate of Bayside last year compared to now. And that was last year.
Oh God. It is just remarkable, like with it, like how far down he has gotten like this.
You know, you bring up a really interesting point that I'll relate to these Fukuoka shows. We'll kind of tackle two birds with one stone here. If Strong Machine J turning on Natural Vibes wouldn't mean anything, because I think the roster is at such a low point that I struggle to think of turns outside of Yoshioka on Tanaka or Tanaka on Yoshioka. I think that would get a response. I think Kame on Rita or Rita on Kame would get a response. Other than that, I don't know. I mean, Ben and Hyo, when Ben gets healthy, I think that would garner a pretty major reaction. But I bring this up because on the first Fukuoka show, they did a singles match between Minoru and Ishin that I was kind of looking forward to. And I couldn't believe, and I said this in the Discord on the Dragon Gate channel, the lack of heat for that match was not concerning. It was absolutely terrifying. No one cared. There wasn't a sound made in that match. And it's one of those weird things with the Minoru story where I feel like on paper, they are doing the right thing. But when you go back and you watch this match, if you haven't seen it, you've got to watch this. There's a spot where Ishin goes to the top rope. He misses a frog splash. Minoru puts him in the crossface. No one makes a sound. There are no crowd calls. There is nothing. It is a silent crossface. It is eerie the way that no one responds. And then Jason Lee comes in. He does the interference spot where he hits Minoru in the head with a tray. I did like Minoru doing that to him in the four-way match on the evening show. And I thought that four-way match was the best thing on that show. When Jason comes in, there's no reaction. He does a weapon run-in spot that doesn't even get polite boos. It's nothing. It is nothing whatsoever. And so now we're in a spot where Jason Lee turns on Coach Minoru, and I'm not even sure that matters. I'm not even sure they can capitalize on that now. That Ishin versus Minoru match had such a terrifying lack of heat. I really can't believe it. I was in awe watching it.
No, it's just like...
And they're doing the right thing in that program, right. Beat by beat. I go, okay, all right, I see what they're doing here. I like that we're doing Minoru versus Jason at Corkin. No one cared. That was one of the crazier Drangy things I've ever seen. Just the lack of response to that match, given that it was Minoru and Ishin, and who has typically been the always reliable Jason Lee to get some sort of reaction, got nothing. Absolute silence in that match.
Yeah, and like... Minoru during this face turn and like this, the footage that has made take with him, it's not like he has made himself a more interesting wrestler. He almost has a case of the Shun where he does not feel like he's turning face, at least with the way he's wrestling. And that's, I feel like it maybe it has a reminder of what just happened with it. That's not necessarily great. I just go back to the fact that I feel like that they did the exact same thing that they did at Shun's homecoming show and did it twice in the same day with this feud. And like, why should Hakata care when they know that it's Minoru versus Ishin, when they know that Jason Lee has been getting involved in everything for the last week and a half?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really hard to get invested into that, even though, like, beat by beat, other than they need to get this match announced for Kobe World and we need to see where this is going to go. Like, we need to get to those kinds of stuff. It just feels like you're spinning wheels when you shouldn't be spinning wheels at all.
Well, I think one of my biggest down arrows in the better, worse, or the same game, I think one of my biggest down arrows is Ishin. And it's not necessarily his fault, because I think as a performer, I still think he's really strong. I voted him incredibly highly in 30 under 30. But Ishin was a guy that we were talking about last year. Is like, oh, well, you know, if Shun wins the Dreamgate belt at World, not knowing that Kikuchi was going to win in August, is like, oh, we should get like a really big Shun versus Ishin Dreamgate match. And that doesn't feel right at all. This tag team with Kato, even though I like both of those guys individually, and I actually will get to Kato in a minute, but I have him as like an arrow up guy, I don't think it's done them any favors. I don't think Ishin and Kakuta have chemistry with one another. And I think the overall public perception of Ishin is so much lower than it was at this time last year.
Yeah. And I think it's like booking too.
I think this is more booking than anything.
Right. Yeah. Like that's where it kind of comes to me, is that Team 204 is doing a lot more for Kato than it is for Ishin, when Ishin has shown that he could be more. And the situation and the overall just malaise within like the heel side, he does not necessarily work in what they're trying to portray Gajah Dokuro as. Like, you kind of get to that big nebulous question.
I would have much rather... I understand what they're doing with Minoru. I think this was the time to turn Ishin, and I would have rather them done that than turn Minoru. I'm ready to cheer. It's a little bit like the Shun thing, where it's like, I'm ready to cheer for this guy. I want to like this guy. Let me like Ishin. They're putting me in a position where I not only can't cheer for the guy, but I'm uninterested in seeing the guy. That's how bad it's become with him.
Yeah, no, I totally see your point.
Yoshiki Kato, I would go Arrow up, though. I think at the very least, Kato has shown that he's a credible wrestler.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is just the fact that over the last 18 months, he's had the most like consistent health of his career. And that's let him kind of get back to where he should have been in his progression and advance forward.
That's the thing. Not only more acclimated with the idea of Kato just as a presence on the roster, but also because of that, he's gotten better as a wrestler. And I think he's taken a pretty major step up, so I like that. The only other Arrow up guy that I have, Tanaka, Rita, Yanagiuchi, Yoshiki Kato. The only other one I have is Hyo. I think Hyo has been absolutely brilliant. And that is with the caveat that I think Jackie Kame was already thought of as one of the best wrestlers in the world last year. And I don't think Kame's changed that. I think maybe some more people have come aboard, but Kame's largely the same. The people that loved him last year loved him the same amount this year. The only other guy on the roster that I'm like, wow, that guy is in a much better position this year than he was last year is Hyo. And when you look at that list, only five guys I think are in a better position than they were this year than they were this time last year. And it's Ryoya Tanaka, an undoubted success story. It's Rita in the sense of I think he's even better than he was last year. Same thing with Hyo. Kato, we'll see what his ceiling is. And then Daiki Yanagiuchi. That is terrifying. Those are the only five names I have in that list.
Would you say Aki's up?
I would put Aki up. He was not on this card, so I didn't have him down. Fair, but I'll fair. Throw yeah, I'll no. throw Aki in there. He was an omission just based on the fact that I was looking at those July names. But you're right. Aki's up. Kimura hadn't debuted at this point in time, but I love Kimura. I mean, you want to throw Cielo in there, sure, but that's sort of a moot point. I mean, I don't know. It's it's very similar to 2018, where, and I had resisted this comparison for the longest time, but I would look at those cards in 2018 and my eyes would immediately dart to, okay, what is Maximum doing on these shows? Yoshino, Doi, Jason, Ben, Shimizu. What are they doing on this show? Because that will be really good. Anything else, who knows? And now when these cards come out, it's what are Kame and Rita doing? What's Tanaka doing? And what's Gyuchi doing? And if those guys are in lame duck matches, it's going to be a really bad show.
Yeah. It's and I think like when you compare that with the Hakata shows, the stuff like the Love and Peace versus Natural Vibes Atomico on the first night, you had a lot of those guys in on that situation, and that was a good use of them, and that felt good with those guys. And then you contrast that with the evening night where Kamei and Minora just was kind of adrift, and everyone else is kind of piecemealed about. You get Rita teaming with Junior. Junior is a guy that I know we didn't even like bring him up in a way, but like he is adrift too. So that's not necessarily a great situation for either Rita or Kato. And these two shows desperately needed Ryoya Tanaka on it.
It's crazy. Like, I mean, the compliment I always gave to Junior was from 2022 until 2025, because I think June of last year, that's when Hyo, they had the Hyo contra Hyo match where Love and Peace ended up forming. And then the next night he had the UT match, the UT Bravegate match. And I would say since then, even though he was Triangle Gate champion at one point, it's not like that reign was all that inspiring. They really haven't done anything with Junior. And the compliment I gave him 2022, 2023, 2024 was he's so good. They're always doing something with him. And as long as he's healthy, he's in the mix and he's really interesting. But Junior is a complete afterthought. I mean, Junior has nothing to sink his teeth into right now. And it shows. He's just a guy.
No, it's one of the more perplexing things, given his age and everything, how much he is just a guy.
Let me throw three more names at you. We'll be done with this, but I want to get your opinion on these specifically. Where do you rank Madoka Kakuta in all of this?
You know, this was Kakuta's chance to have a Dreamgate run that felt like that would have some care, would have some booking around it, and would have some build up for his challengers. And he just didn't get that. And I don't know necessarily how much to blame him for that, but what I could blame him for is that I think that he in ring has become kind of stale over the last 9 months. And that's kind of becoming more of a drain on me. Whereas I felt like I was a little bit more complimentary or more willing to give the run a shot last year after the Shun match, after the Benkei match. Like, I was still kind of in on it. And at this point, it's a negative title run. It hasn't done what I was hoping it to go out to be, but it's still, I mean, objectively, he is the Dreamgate champion, but it makes it a hard one. Like Kakuta is the hardest one, I feel like, so far for me, just because if you look on paper, everything says Arrow up, but if you just look on paper, you're not seeing the full story through experience, and through experience, it would be an Arrow down. So I guess Arrow in the middle, because he was already getting pushed pretty hard last July.
He was. I think the way I can illustrate it is, you know, last year at World, there was that no DQ match between Kakuta and Strong Machine J. And we were talking about how, you know, Kakuta turned heel at that cage match in May. And then from May through July was just ripping through guys, especially in Corkin. And I was really excited about that heel turn. This Dreamgate run has done permanent damage to him. It will define his career, maybe not be the defining thing, but Kikuchi could go on to be a Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Famer, and we would still go, yeah, but he had that Dreamgate run in 2025. Think about what that did. His career will never be the same because of this Dreamgate run, and it will never be the same in a worse way. The public perception of him has changed for the worse, and it will take him years to recover, and he might not ever fully recover from this. And I think that's an Arrow down guy.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, it really is like the results don't tell the story with Kakuta's year.
No, not at all. It's one of those where you watch it and you're engrossed in it and you see what's happening there. Mike, tell me, as I round this out here, two more names. How many singles matches in Japan has Yamato had this year?
Jeez. Has he had any?
He's had one. Untelevised.
Okay.
January 24th, 2026, Yamato versus Jiro Shimbashi. It's the only thing we've gotten out of Yamato this year. It's a Jiro match. I can't believe that we're a year removed from one of the great Dreamgate runs in history, mm-hmm. and he has done absolutely nothing this calendar year. I said at the time, you can go back and you can listen to the tape, I said, they have something with Yamato and Gucci. They have special chemistry. Yamato brings something out of him. Gucci brings something out of him. They need to ride Vibes versus Paradox into Kobe World as a big featured match where you can have Paradox win. And you can have Yamato pin Gucci at Kobe World. It's Yamato and it's Kobe World. You have a special set of circumstances there where Yamato can win that match. But you have to have Vibes beat Paradox in every combination until Yamato finds the right group of guys, and then Yamato has to get his revenge in July at Kobe World. And instead, Vibes lost those belts to a Ryukyu Dragon team that then vacated the titles. Yamato's nowhere to be found doing anything interesting. He hasn't done anything interesting except for these random one-off matches with Gucci that, I mean, it's amazing. He's just a complete afterthought. And it's an Arrow down guy just on the sense of booking malpractice. They've thrown in the towel on Yamato's career, essentially.
Oh, it's completely like it. I don't know anything, but it makes me wonder, given the last couple of years, like how happy Yamato is with people in the company, you know?
You tell me you would be a better gauge here, but it does seem like, at least publicly, Yamato's often siding with management and not, mm-hmm. say, the younger wrestlers on the roster, which I think creates a really interesting wrinkle there. But I mean, he's doing nothing. Dangerous Gate last year was Dragon Kid Yamato and Kimura versus Aoyagi Inoue and Yuma Aoyagi, and
which
we thought, it rocked. We thought, maybe there's something with Yamato and Kimura. Maybe they'll do something there. And then they abandon that. And then Kimura's like, maybe he's going to be in Saipatro. No, he's not. Okay. And then now Kimura's just been completely fucked in the booking. Why are we not going back to Yamato and Kimura? Why can't Yamato do anything interesting? What is happening?
No, it's like I would have circled Kimura back around, having to go through a full trial series against Cypatra as penance, and then he gets accepted in and said, like, all right, you took your alums. We see you as one of our own. Come in. You're now the young guy in Paradox, and you would have basically been up to the races, and you know, you wouldn't have to have Hulk, you know, be Hulk as much. You know, you could actually be like saving some of these guys who have significant miles on their tires.
If you don't want to run with this Triangle Gate stuff, which was handed to you on a platter, you know, whatever. Imagine Kobe World with a hyped Yamato versus Kimura match as match number 5 on an 8-match show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And especially Yamato tapping into the Yamato, like the bad mood Yamato stuff could be, you know, the highlight of Kobe World.
He can still go. It might be a health thing with him in the sense that he's really beat up. But did you watch him in the 16 karat this year?
I have not gotten around to that footage.
Okay, Yamato versus Axel Tischer from the opening night was awesome. And if Yamato can do that in Germany, he can do that in Japan. So there's no excuse for this not to happen.
I loved Yamato versus Gresham more than you did.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Yamato clearly has it. Like, honestly, if Orange Crush is doing this thing, that seems like a great way to lose a whole lot of money real quick. Why did you not bring Yamato in for the Gresham show after that DGUSA show?
I don't know. I don't know what's happening. I'm baffled by it. Last name I'll throw at you. To me, it's the most concerning arrow down there is. Year over year, your thoughts on Hamare?
Yeah, I kind of, like, and again, don't know anything. I haven't heard any new Shun news over the weeks. But
nor have I.
It feels like, in a weird way, like if we're putting that hat on, it feels like he's kind of getting punished for Skywalker leaving in a way. With the way
but
he's
still in the Brave Gate match. I would rather him be punished and work an 8-man opening tag with fucking Problem Dragon than do what they're doing to him now. I will continue to say this until it changes. I will say this every episode until it is not true. He has not won on TV since April. He has not won a televised match since getting his head shaved in April. And he is wrestling for the Brave Gate belt at Kobe World. And I don't trust with how bad this company is right now. He might win, for all we know, and screw Tanaka on breaking the record. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't trust anything or anyone at this point, but I do know that Hamare has not won a match on TV since getting his head shaved in April, and I will continue to reiterate until it becomes clear to me that I do not understand what his character at this point in time is supposed to be. And if I was Ryoya Tanaka, the man, not the wrestler, and I was thinking about the future of my career and the momentum that I have, and Dragon Gate came to me and they said, hey, we're going to put you and Hamare in a unit together, I might go, brother, that don't work for me. I don't want this anchor next to me. This guy who is ice fucking cold right now, who headlined Cork and Hall against Yamato in a singles match last year. And I think when that match was announced, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I think our eyebrows were raised at, like, oh, okay, you know, that's a big spot for Hamare, but it wasn't like, oh my God, what are they doing? This is insane. It was like, yeah, no, I think he could rise to the occasion. Can you imagine Hamare headlining a Cork and Hall show right now?
No, no. And it was like on the heels of like him winning Rey de Parejas. There was the looming Shun kind of situation there. Like, it was completely deserved for the booking for him to be there. And it's just not it is not an ability that Ryo Saito has anymore, is to actually do that level of care, or whoever did that, because I'm of the belief now that Ryo Saito had someone bailing him out in the booking office, frankly, given what we've seen over the last 7 months.
It's insane. I really can't believe the malpractice that has happened with Hamare just in the last 3 months. Just a complete character assassination of this guy, in a way where I think he will be a future Dreamgate champion. I think everything will turn out to be okay, but right now it does not feel good. It does not feel good at all to be a Hamare fan.
No, it's perplexing seeing that he is someone still so young in his career, have like such like, and be someone who have such clear upper trajectory up until April of this year. And if you want to like even like put aside the whole Sipatra of it all, it still felt like that he was going to reach this height. And it's going like, geez, this guy's 21. He's already at this point. Imagine when he's away from Shun and the limiter is taken off. And we've learned that when he's away from Shun and the quote unquote limiter is taken off, he'll have great matches at a Kyoto show and then be booked to hell.
Terrible. Okay. It's absolutely terrible.
Well, Case, do we want to talk about something positive before we get out of here on this episode?
Hit me with your quick Osaka Pro thoughts. I don't have a ton of time, but I've got enough time to hear you talk about Osaka Pro, which will warm my cold, dead heart.
Right. Yeah, right. I just want, like, we let off talking about what is emo and not. Then we had a shit sandwich and we have like the other piece of bread here. Like you're taught in school, like this is how you do compliments. You sandwich criticism in between compliments here. And I have a lot of compliments for Osaka Pro because, Case, you sold me on the Osaka Pro, and let me tell you, I watched the Ultimate Spider J 20th anniversary, Takoyaki Kida 21st anniversary show that was, I guess, 2 weeks ago or thereabouts. And let me tell you, I think, do you want to hear like what my comp is, at least for me, for like what watching the show was? It felt like when Chikara in 2007, like when I was like getting into like the indies and like being able to like go to indies and stuff like that, when things weren't too comic booky and things were just pleasant, and it was just like, you know, like this is like a fun indie show that was like 2.5 hours, get the DVD, have a good time, see a lot of guys that I never saw before, and then also like get to see younger wrestlers get developed. And then one of the things that I really enjoyed in the Deadlock period of Deadlock Pro Wrestling was like that it just had this very digestible show that was very low on the frills, but it was very like digestible wrestling for wrestling's sake, and it was just all kind of geared to kind of like that. And I gotta tell you, this felt a lot more like comfort food lucha rest to me than what happened in Hakata last week or last weekend. I adored this show. Was it like my life changing? Like, is it going to like now have me like okay, should we do more Osaka Pro content on it? No, not really, but that's not what I want from this. But I really had a great time with it. I thought that the way that they kind of just bundle these shows and have like the full version where like you get like the in-ring promo with USJ and Takoyaki Kida and Zeus bringing out flowers and like a nice like touching moment. And then you get that video that tells you what all is going to be happening and who is in with what. And the roster they have, I know it's not a big roster, and I know that not everyone there is a permanent Osaka regular, but there's a lot of fun stuff there. The Azalea Taisho Hall is a great venue for them. It does have like the Delphin Arena, and I forget what the second arena's name's kind of vibe to it, but a little bit bigger. And the work, I mean, you said that I should check out Aran Sato, and he is a lot of fun, especially for a guy of like working this style. Like, he kind of reminded me in some ways, and it might just because he did the BT bomb like this, like of a young T-Hawk.
I think that's a good comp. Yeah.
With that. And I like that. A Tiger's Mask being a net positive to promotion as a 50-year-old, it feels alien to me to have someone like that around. Case,
I think it was Alan that said that Tiger's Mask is one of like his top five workers of the year, and I was like, yeah, that. I mean, I'm not that high on him, but that's not crazy. I understand where he's coming from,
and like it's wild to me. Like, I was talking about Chikara for a second. Like, USJ and Takoyaki Kida were guys that that you kind of like were somewhat aware of because of the relationship that Quack had with Osaka Pro. Like, you would have Tadasuke ended up being like a full year King Young Lions Cup winners, but like there was always like an undercurrent, and like these are like two guys that I remember the Osaka Hurricane website and like the Gordy post, which did you ever see the Gordy post? Was that like after your era, your entry into pro wrestling with DVDVR?
I don't recall.
So DVDVR, like back when that was an active forum, they would have it all separated. And there was an Osaka Pro thread that there was like a foreigner who lived in Osaka by the name of Gordy, who would post like all of his going to these shows. And it was like, I feel like it was like 2000. It was like through the era that Harada and Katoge were there before they left. And it always felt like the most fun kind of thing. And like characters like Takayaki Kida and USJ would pop up as young guys here and then going like, dang, 20 years into their career. And I was a notebook on that main event. I thought it was a lot of fun. And especially like the ability, especially for a what feels like a territory to like get the crowd like so into all of it. And the top rope rock bottom actually really rocked as a finish. I did not see that coming. I was hell yeah on it. I skipped over the comedy match because bless his heart, I don't need to see the bodyguard doing comedy matches at this point in my life. Vertex versus Rogue Nation. Big on Matsufuda and Osera. Took me like 5 minutes and going for me to realize that Suzuku is Oji Shiba, which was a funny thing for me. But fun trios match. We'll never hate seeing Habu, and I like Sho Mizuno in the opener. I thought that I liked his kind of kick boy kind of things, and Tsubasa and Mihara kind of working very grounded in the open. I'm gonna keep up on Osaka Pro now. I think I'm a convert.
Good. All right. Well, whenever it makes tape, we'll talk about it because I also really like it. And I think that Sho Mizuno kid is going to be special. So I have a lot invested in him.
Yeah. Yeah. I would put stock in him. I don't know about like Asakura and Toru of Rogue Nation. And those are Toru is a name I've seen around a long time. Same with Tita. But like Tita never really did much for me, but like he was like the most over person in that match. And I was like, okay, maybe I need to start like watching more Vertex matches too. But yeah, no, I'm in on it now.
Good stuff. I agree.
All right. Well, Case, that's going to do it for Open the Voice Gate this week. We will be back with Open the Voice Gate after the July 2nd Cork in that weekend. That set of shows will be back with Open the Voice Gate then. So it will be taking a break next week in the feed. But Case, next time you hear from us, it's the big one. It is time for us on those days to talk about these days.
10-10-96 with a very special guest.
Yep, we can't wait to get that recorded, and you all will have that into your feeds around this time next week. You can follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. That's both on Twitter and on Blue Sky. Case is at _ in your case on Twitter. I'm at Fujiheya. There's the Voices of Wrestling Discord, which is another great place to keep up with the show. That's where the Dragon Gate channel is, as well as the Open the Voice Gate channel. I did a post earlier this week about the situation with Michinoku Pro video footage in those days. There will be more updates with that going on, but that's where we post our production notes, footage lists, basically anything about the show. It's kind of the best place to kind of keep current on that there on the Voices of Wrestling Discord. But that's going to do it for this week. We will be back with you with those days next week. Take care, everyone.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich. And if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.